Welcome in to the Devi Devotional Podcast, a show devoted to all things Devi and C2C. Hosted by John Arrington and Aaron Wilcox, this dynamic duo brings you actionable strategies with player-driven analysis for your Devi and C2C leagues. Let's dive in.
Let's dive in. In fact, let's vent. Let's get some stuff off of our chest. Welcome to the Devi Devotional. I'm your host, Dynasty Coach A, joined as always by Aaron Wilcox at Aaron Wilcox 86, except for last week when we weren't, but always moving forward, of course. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
Hey, I'm doing well and happy to be back. You know, we had a great guest. Dirty Mike was on the podcast. You guys did some great work. I even made some time on the honeymoon trip to listen to that. Great episode. So go back and listen to that, folks, if you want a little bit of knowledge, Devi knowledge. But tonight is going to be a little different, just kind of saying what's on our minds, maybe get a little feisty here or there, discuss some takes that are floating around out there, or maybe some, you know, strategy or things that we don't like strategy wise that we're seeing. So yes, let's get into it.
Absolutely. Like Aaron said, you know, basically tonight, just anything we want to talk about. We didn't plan a show sheet or anything like that. We basically just said we're going to vent. We're going to get stuff off our chest. We've talked about like narratives and stuff in the past, you know, that we didn't really like. You know, maybe we touch on something that we already discussed and just, you know, bring up a new idea or whatever, or maybe it's a player ranking, whatever it might be. We haven't discussed what we were going to talk about to each other, so we're just going to come off the chest here and see what, you know, what is bothering us. And Aaron, I don't know if you have something that's truly bothering you that you want to start off with, or if you want me to start with mine. I don't know if I should save. I have a big thing I would like to vent about. I don't know if I should save it for the end or if we should just start off with the bang.
Well, maybe we'll break something recent news-wise, and then we can get into your big deal there. I'm excited to hear that. But just today, it was announced that juniors can now participate in pre-draft, all-star, or showcase games and practices. So, I mean, things like the Shrine Bowl, Senior Bowl, Legacy Bowl, whatever that is, you know, all of those things. And I think it's really, really neat. And it's very interesting and divisive, I guess, on Twitter, because I'm seeing a lot of people kind of mad about this. They're like, why did juniors get this opportunity? So it's drawn some hate. And I agree that if juniors should be allowed to play and participate in the Senior Bowl, they should probably change the name. I get that. But why? I just don't get it. People are saying it should be a game reserved for those who haven't been able to showcase what they're capable of. And do you know how silly that sounds? Like, dude, the guys at the Senior Bowl every year, they're like fourth, fifth, sixth year players. They've had plenty of opportunity to showcase what they're capable of. Right. In comparison, juniors have only had three seasons. So I guess that's just something silly that I've seen floating around there that I wanted to touch on right away. Yeah. I think it's a neat opportunity for these juniors.
Yeah, actually, I love it. I guess it'll be very interesting to see how all it works out and everything, how it plays out, because I guess technically any player could, you know, any junior or, you know, any draft eligible player, I should say, can and possibly will go to these all-star things. But the top players, Marvin Harrison Jr. is not going to the Senior Bowl or whatever they change it to, you know, like, you know, I guess you could possibly say like an Emeka Ibuka, he's had an injury plagued season. People are talking about him possibly going back this year, you know, not playing well. Maybe somebody like that goes, okay, I need to go, you know, make a stand and show people I'm still me. And maybe they would go, but you know, that's, he's been hurt. You know, it's not really like his fault. I don't think we consider Emeka Ibuka an injury plagued or injury prone player or anything like that to where we would say, but you know, I heard a podcast today talking about how he only has 300 receiving yards this year, you know, like, can he really come out and this and that? And I'm like, I get it. I get what you're saying, you know, cause if it was a player that I didn't like, I'd probably make the argument, hey, you know, like he's only got 300 yards receiving and all that. So I completely get it. But I think about players like that, that maybe, and I mean, that's obviously like a high level one, but then you think about maybe some other players that, you know, for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked out, you know, where they have a shitty QB or, you know, bad offensive scheme, whatever it might be, injuries, all that kind of stuff. So I love the fact that they're allowing these players to do it, because how many seniors go to the Senior Bowl and then are still not actually quality players? Now, I mean, obviously there's a lot of good players that have come out of the Senior Bowl, but there's a thousand more that have never done a single thing. And so, you know, maybe we'll start getting some of these juniors to where we go, you know, there's a little more excitement there, you know?
Yeah, it definitely adds to the quality that's there. Like you were saying, like there's the occasional guys who pop out at a senior or a Shrine Bowl. You know, you're always going to get your Zay Flowers or the Terry McLaurins or guys like that, which, I mean, that's super fun. I love that event for them, and they're still going to have that opportunity. It's not like we're kicking them out. So just infusing some juniors would be interesting. I think there was, as part of that big tweet that went out today, there were 69 juniors entered into the draft last year that obviously could not play in any sort of this all-star game or practice format. So, I mean, 69 juniors, I don't think that's going to oversaturate it necessarily at the skill position. But I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Like you said, the Marvin Harrison juniors are not going to likely do that. Even like a Malik Nabers or somebody like that, there's no guarantee that they want to participate if they're coming off of this really nice season and career. So yes, a great redemption, like you said, for maybe an Emeka Buka, Raheem Sanders. I know that's a guy, same line of thought there. And I know you're on board with, you know, he needs to prove a little bit more, but it's not like he has no talent. He could definitely rebound.
Yeah, if anything, I wonder if it might hurt some of the seniors. But once again, I think that, you know, if you're getting hurt by a junior, it's because you're not as good. You know, like that's yeah, probably the case.
We're hopefully not going to have as many of the like Jonathan Mingos out there who just rise up, because, I mean, the juniors can't really showcase themselves. So it's definitely the seniors who are, you know, getting more eyes on them. And that's causing these NFL teams to make suboptimal decisions in a lot of cases. And I mean, they've been doing that for years, right? I mean, Dwayne Eskridge or like guys like that, I mean, they're just getting overdrafted. And maybe that's because of all the exposure that they are getting at these types of events, and they're blowing up in these Senior Bowl practices and things like that, when it's not a game situation. We're ignoring their body of work in college. So again, this is not to say like, okay, we should just do away with like senior guys, because I mean, we know that there's very good senior players every year, but yes, I think it is a fun thing ultimately. So those are some good points, but I am curious, John, you got something that's on your mind here?
Well, yeah, actually real quick before we switch over, I was just thinking, you know, in previous years, the Shrine Bowl has been considered a lesser bowl and all that kind of stuff. I think we've seen it starting last year that they're taking strides to become more than that. And I think that Zay Flowers was like one of the first big names that went to the Shrine Bowl, and then obviously as a NFL stud. So I think in the past we've been kind of like, ooh, they went to the Shrine Bowl. I think we just have to kind of get that out of our head now. Maybe that's recency bias, but I mean, it just seems like the NFL is trying to make these bowls, these all-star games, more important. And that's what the Shrine Bowl was saying last year, is like, you know, we're going to make this a true all-star game, like not just some BS thing that, you know, like no name players go to. We're going to make this an actual all-star game, and we're going to invite big name players, and we're going to get some of them. And, you know, like we really only had a couple guys that have truly gone there and become big things in the NFL so far, but I could see that possibly changing.
Yeah. And that would be super fun to see that change. So I like it.
Me too. So, I'll just go ahead and talk about this one, because I think it's an important one, and we could probably talk about it for a while, and then we could probably go off on about four or five different tangents from it. So I think it's a good topic, and it's something that you've touched on before. It's something that I've talked about before, but I think that we're getting some pretty clear answers now to where we can say that the idea of you have to draft quarterbacks and supplemental drafts, whether it's supplemental for C2C or supplemental for Devy, is just not necessarily the answer, or not necessarily like the truth. You don't have to draft quarterbacks, these five-star prospects, all that kind of stuff. It's not the cheapest that you're ever going to get them, you know, and that's always been the argument. You've said it in the past, you know, oh, it's the cheapest you're ever going to get them. Look at what happened with Caleb Williams. And that's what happens is whenever you say anything about QBs, people go, look what happened with Caleb Williams. But they don't talk about the 28 other quarterbacks that didn't become Caleb Williams. And I really think, look at who the stud QBs are that we're considering for the NFL draft this year. We're looking at Caleb Williams. We're looking at Drake May. Now we're looking at JJ McCarthy. Now we're talking about Jaden Daniels, Jackson Dart, possibly Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr. Like, I'm not huge fans of them, but they're obviously in the mix. People are talking about those. Think about how cheaply you could have gotten a JJ McCarthy last offseason. Think about how cheap you can get a Jackson Dart this offseason. And, you know, like Drake May, in week four, people were saying, do we have to be concerned about Drake May? You know, are we worried about Drake May? You know, the only quarterback that like people actually truly cared about was Caleb Williams. So I don't believe that it's true that that's the cheapest you can ever get these quarterbacks, because we're seeing it happen week after week, you know, month after month, year after year, to where you have opportunities to go get these quarterbacks. And you also have opportunities to move off of other quarterbacks that other people still believe in. And so I really think that, you know, obviously I've done the research over the offseason for DLF. I did all those articles for C2C and supplemental drafts and all that. I don't think anything's changed. Like if anything, I feel more, what's the word? Fervent. Is that the word in my argument that like these quarterbacks are really bad investments. Like they're just poor investments. And I'm not saying you should never draft one or anything like that, but I'm just saying there's probably better players that you should and could and can go ahead and draft for. Yeah. And Felix Sharp is in the, sorry for cutting you off, Aaron, but Felix is in the chat saying nobody was trading for Jackson Dart this offseason. And that's 100% true. I tried to trade off Jackson Dart in a C2C league that I took over an orphan for. And the guy I tried to trade him for, because I wanted a running back. I have like 18 quarterbacks for whatever reason. I'm like, I need a running back. I tried to trade him away. And the dude goes, why do I want a backup quarterback? Spencer Sanders is coming over here and blah, blah, blah. And that was when I started going off on my whole Spencer Sanders is terrible. Why? How the hell is he going to take over this job rant? It wasn't even ever that I truly believed in Jackson Dart. It was that I did not believe in Spencer Sanders. But sometimes that's just as important as anything else, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, a fair point by Felix there too. And you just compare, even in startup supplementals, whatever the case is, the cost discrepancy between Drew LR, Quinn Ewers, Cade Klubnik, and then you go down the list and you're like, oh, wait, you could have got Jaden Daniels, LSU quarterback, who is what, like the quarterback won in all of like CFF, just having a great season. The signs were there. It's just we wanted to ignore it because of what size, probably size and age, right? And Jackson Dart, Dylan Gabriel, even later on, like, and I'm not saying Dylan Gabriel is like this great Devy prospect because he's not, but he's just had a very, very successful season. And there sometimes is an edge to waiting at quarterback. I think that's a very fair point. So you do have to straddle that line of like, do I really want to invest in a young guy who we're just totally just off projection? It's not necessarily anything that we've seen so far or just such a small sample, like a Cade Klubnik, like you saw like a little bit on film or whatever the case to get you excited as a true freshman, but man, it's just not worth the cost that you pay. So I think on Campus Life this week, Austin Nace was talking a little bit about that too, like how in looking ahead to startups next season, I mean, he's not touching a quarterback in the first round of startups. It's just like there's too much unknowns at the moment at the quarterback position, especially since everybody wants to be really young at the position, right? You want to take maybe a sophomore typically, or maybe a junior even. So I think that's really great points off at the quarterback position.
Yeah. And Felix goes on to say, it's easy to look back and say what could have been. The more difficult task is picking the dollar stock today and telling people it's going to be worth 10 times tomorrow. And I agree with them. It's not always 100%. And I will not victory lap Jackson Dart, even though I've done it on the Full Tilt Devi pod. But that was just because that's where I made my, or like laid my claim of, he is 1,000 times better than Spencer Sanders. He's not going to lose his job to Spencer Sanders. But I didn't truly believe that Jackson Dart was this amazing quarterback. So I'm not trying to victory lap him. I will 100% victory lap JJ McCarthy and Jaden Daniels, because I have sat here for, 2 years now talking about how these are quality NFL quarterbacks. And I have gotten, because Felix is in the chat, I will say I got mocked and ridiculed by Aaron and others for my JJ McCarthy and my Jaden Daniels love. So, go check out my article talking about, you know, some of the important metrics that we're looking for with these QBs. Aaron just put out an article on campustocanton.com as well. So we're both trying to show people, hey, maybe it's not as we're not as bad at this as people want to act. Like, we actually can figure out who the good QBs are. It's not 100%. We're never going to hit 100%, but we can definitely say this guy is above this guy. And this guy's looking a lot better than this guy. And that's what we're trying to do. So, you know, we can talk about who we think that's going to be in the future. But like I said, right now, it's definitely looking like JJ McCarthy, Jackson Dart, Jaden Daniels, like those guys were steals. And then your Quinn Ewers, your Devin Browns, your Kyle McCords, like all these guys that people were spending first round picks on in supplemental and Devy drafts, they're nowhere to be found. Like, no one cares about these guys. I mean, Kyle McCord kind of has some value, but not really. You know, people are figuring out pretty quickly he's not an NFL QB. And, you know, I could go on for probably an hour about different QBs that were considered a top five guy at some point, a first round pick at some point, and they have not hit. And yet the argument always goes back to, oh, well, yeah, but look, you would have never gotten Caleb Williams. It's like, look at Caleb Williams now. Do we even think he's the first, you know, the QB one? No, I don't think so. So maybe we didn't want to get Caleb Williams. I don't want to act like he's bad or anything.
Right. And not necessarily like that is one of the times where it did work out, right? Or if you managed to snag Drake May, and you didn't have to draft him highly necessarily in rookie drafts, or not nearly as high. But I think that, you know, going back to even Felix's comment there too, it's easy to go back and look back and say what, you know, could have been, or go back at these situations and say, oh yeah, that was easy to call that. But I mean, it is sometimes difficult, but we know what risky propositions are drafting, let's say, quarterbacks super early. For example, DJU, Spencer Rattler, those were, they're like top five picks in startups, in Superflex leagues. That was insane in C2C and Devy formats. They just didn't necessarily, I don't know, it's a risk doing that. So I think it is fair to talk about that and kind of reflect and say, maybe we do need to shift how confident we are drafting some of the quarterbacks when they're not as established, compared to, I think that it was safe to draft Caleb Williams and Drake Mace early in startups this last year. It's not like either one of them has bottomed out or will likely bottom out at this point, but the guys who are more unproven or unknown, who are bigger projections, you got to be kind of wary and pick your shots there when you're going to draft them.
Yeah, even looking at this past draft class, we had, Dante Moore was going as what, the QB2, generally speaking, sometimes a QB1 for people. Now he's being benched for Ethan Garber's. I don't remember who it was, but somebody. And then... You know, we have obviously like Arch Manning. Everyone's really overly concerned about Arch Manning. Malachi Nelson looked absolutely terrible in the spring game as well. Now, I don't think anyone's like truly freaking out about him, but can we really truly say that we believe he's going to be a stud beyond the fact that he's in a Lincoln Riley system that's showing that it's not really the greatest at actually like turning a quarterback into a stud? It's just more about like having a player be open or something like that, more than like actually teaching a quarterback how to be a quarterback. It just seems like there's so many of these guys that we're just like, you know, we're already saying Jaden Rashada, he even, you know, got some hype at one point, and then I think he either got hurt or benched or both, or, you know, whatever. There just seems like there's so many of these guys that we're already ready to kind of move on from. And yet, you know, 3-4 months ago, they were the talk of the town. You know, they're, oh, you have 103, you got to take this guy, you know?
Well, yeah, and you're going to see their costs rise back up if you're taking part in startup drafts come here in just a few months. Like, you're going to see some of those guys maybe go in the second, third round. And, you know, that is a risky proposition. I think that's maybe one of the takeaways that folks can have from what we're discussing right here. And maybe you pivot to a Connor Wigman, who has at least shown a little bit more consistency across his first 2 years. Now, he's been injured, but he still is shown a lot this season improvement wise. So I think that he is the safer bet, you know, if you are actually drafting these guys that early who are maybe risky and unproven.
Absolutely. Since we're already on the topic, I'm just going to go ahead and move on to my next vent. And it's people talking about JJ McCarthy as a second round pick in the NFL draft and or a second round pick in your rookie drafts. And I don't see it. I don't understand. Now, if he goes out and he completely bombs against Penn State, completely bombs against an Ohio State, then maybe we can have that conversation. That hasn't happened. We're still in the past here. So, like, with what we have, with the information that we have right now, I don't know how you can look at anything that JJ McCarthy has done this season, last season, and then, I mean, obviously he didn't really touch the ball that much, you know, the year before, but even then he was like he was an exciting running quarterback in that year one. But now look at what he's done this year. Yeah, the stats aren't prolific, but everything that he's doing is just amazing, whether it's the big-time throw rate, the intended air yards, the PPR points per touch, the interception rate is amazing, like all that kind of stuff. And the only thing you can really, like, the only argument you really get from people when you say, like, well, why do you think he would be a second-round pick compared to, like, you know, Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, or whoever else. And they go, oh, well, you know, he threw two pick sixes against TCU last year in a bowl game. And it's like, wait, that's your argument? Like, one game last year? And, like, a pick six is really no different than any other interception, except for that it looks way worse. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, he threw two picks. That's all it was, you know? So, like, I just don't understand the argument. Like I said, if he completely falls apart, it's a completely different story, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. And I will say, to play devil's advocate, he did throw three interceptions against Bowling Green this season. Bowling Green.
Oh yeah. That game was like wild.
Right. They barely have a winning record. So, you know, there are holes that you can poke in it, partially just because of the schedule too, but by no means take that as like, I hate JJ McCarthy. I actually just wrote that article that you said. He is one of the guys I covered in that article. So check that out at campusdecanon.com. But you'll look at his schedule and you do have to admit it's been soft. It's Purdue, Michigan State, Indiana, Minnesota, Nebraska, Rutgers, Bowling Green, UNLV, and East Carolina. I am really, really excited for the Penn State matchup this weekend, then Maryland after that, and then Ohio State. That's going to be a fun stretch. So it's not necessarily foregone that, you know, JJ McCarthy, he's done everything that we've asked out of him. He still needs to perform really well in those games and show that he can do it against every bit of competition. But I mean, what he's done this season, like you said, every area of his game has improved. He just needs to sustain that, right? Just like we've seen the recent kind of unraveling of Caleb Williams in some ways. Hopefully we don't see that out of a McCarthy with a couple of tough matchups. So I am looking ahead to those intently for sure.
Yeah. Honestly, for me, it's like, I have never truly paid attention to each individual game for players before the past couple of years. Before that, it's always been a profile, you know? And so it was like, this guy had 40 touchdowns and 4,000 yards and whatever else, and that's his profile. Now I'm looking at individual games, but in the grand scheme of things, when I create my rookie model and I look at, you know, what a player has done, I'm not looking at individual games. I'm looking at an entire profile. Now, there's different things that different metrics and different things, best season, you know, total season, total career, like all that kind of stuff that I'm looking at. But one individual game is not going to make or break a player. And so while I'm sitting here saying, like, obviously things could come down for JJ McCarthy if he performs poorly against Ohio State, against Penn State, the reason why we're saying that is because they're good defenses, and it's still just one or two games in the grand scheme of 24, you know, or more that he's, you know, that he's truly played here. So, Yeah, of course it would. Like, if he goes out and just completely tanks in these games, it's going to lower him. That doesn't make him a bad quarterback, because right now he's literally like the best ranked quarterback in the model. Because he's, I mean, maybe because he hasn't played anyone or whatever, but like, if he goes from the best to one of the best, he's still one of the best, you know? That's my whole argument with, like, I just don't understand the whole second round pick. I mean, like, if you look at Dane Brugler, like what he's talking about, he had him as what, a top 10 pick, a top 15 pick. I think it was top 10, but at the very least it was top 15. And I feel like the more you talk and hear about like NFL draft prospects, they're talking about JJ McCarthy as a stud. They're talking about JJ McCarthy as one of the top players, not a second round pick, not a third round pick, not somebody you should be taking in the second round of your rookie drafts. They're talking about him as a top guy. And obviously we know, you know, look at Will Levis last year. Like, we know that just because you get talked about as a top guy doesn't mean you get drafted as a top guy. But we also know that Will Levis sucks. Like, so we, you know, that's why he dropped. JJ McCarthy doesn't suck.
Yeah. And I think an interesting angle of this argument, it's more against usually. Typically it's used against them, is the school bias, right? Michigan can't develop quarterbacks. And that was always my hesitation too. Are they going to actually set him up in a situation that develops his talent, develops his abilities as a high-end passer that can translate to the NFL level and whatnot? But he just continues to improve. So you have to give him credit for that. But, you know, going back to the school thing, we do that so often. We give guys either passes for, you know, maybe they'll figure it out. You know, they're at Alabama or this place, that place. And we need to always keep in mind, what are they doing as players? Like, are they just blowing their chances? Are they showing us that they're actually not very good? Because for so many years, you blindly follow, okay, Georgia. Yep, Georgia puts out amazing backs. But after so many years, does Kendall Milton, do you still go crawling back to Kendall Milton? Do you still, you know, cling to him as like a significant Devy asset? And then you kind of do the same thing with some other schools. I get it. There's those situations where they're like so entrenched as reliable programs, like Ohio State wide receivers right now. Okay. Yeah. They can't miss, or almost can't miss, right? Julian Fleming and some of the freshmen there kind of flop. But for the most part, it's just always interesting to see the school narratives out there. I don't know if you have more examples or things that come to mind, John, but you know, for the most part, we definitely want guys at Power 5 programs. You've done some research out there, and it's just evident that, you know, G5 guys, especially at the running back position, for example, but, you know, usually a quarterback, are not going to be difference-making NFL starters. That's just so uncommon. So any thoughts, I guess, with school bias takes out there?
It's so tough because I think it boils down to, like, especially if you're talking about like in Alabama, it boils down to a, are you being drafted conversation versus a, are you a good conversation? Are you a good player conversation? And so like look at Najee Harris, look at Damian Pierce, you know, they both, you know, I mean, obviously like they got drafted in different rounds and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not truly trying to comp the players, but it's two players that, you know, were in SEC schools and got some hype, and then they go to the NFL and they're not really all that great, you know? And so like, you know, it's tough, but they got drafted. They got hyped. You could have sold them at some point. It's so tough because they had value and you can take advantage of value. But if you're looking for like the best players, then you have to actually look for the best players and look for the best metrics and all that kind of stuff. If you're looking for who's going to get the best draft capital so I can take advantage of it, that's a completely different ball game than what I'm ever looking for. You know, and I'm not saying that one's right or wrong. It's just that I would prefer to find the best players and not even have to worry about draft capital. You know, it brings me back to a Sam Howell. You know, like, people were like, oh, he's a fifth round pick, he's garbage, he's backup, whatever. Now Washington, hey, he's our QB of the future. Like, oh, okay, yeah, we kind of knew that, right?
Yeah, that's fair. And I don't want to, you know, disparage some of these big schools who have been very reliable at putting out these players, and some of them having NFL success, but not all by any means. So you look at Bama currently, and I think that there's a reason I just traded for Isaiah Bond in a league. Not that he was my primary target in the trade, but just the fact that, I mean, he is in a system that's known for putting out NFL talent, and some guys who have actually hit at the NFL level, very good recruit and opportunity ahead of him. And he's starting to make some noise. He's been a little bit inconsistent. He hasn't, you know, he's not popping in the model yet just because he hasn't fully put that together, but being a sophomore and there's still a decent amount of time rest of season trending in the right direction with Jalen Milroe at least playing fairly well. I know he's rushing for all the touchdowns, right? He needs to throw for some touchdowns, but anyway, you know, there's instances like that where we want to value. Okay. The fact that this guy's at Alabama, that's going to keep his value afloat. It's definitely going to support, especially if he breaks out fully, that's going to support, you know, maybe day one, day two draft capital in the future.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't even know if we're venting it or just like riffing at this point, but either way, you know, like going with the whole school thing, you know, Stetson Bennett was not considered a good quarterback by any means, by really anyone, except for maybe the hardcore Georgia fans. And then, but you know, he got drafted. It wasn't well, but he still got drafted. Well, then Carson Beck takes over. And now, like, honestly, Carson Beck hasn't done anything that's been like, much better than Stetson Bennett, but yet I guess because he's not like a ninth year player like Bennett was, he's actually getting some draft buzz just because he's from Georgia and all that kind of stuff. I don't really agree with it, you know, like I don't really think he should get it, but he is getting it. So I think that's just one of those examples where like sometimes you can just take advantage of these guys even if they aren't truly players. And the funny thing is earlier I was talking about Najee Harris. And I meant to say Brian Robinson, you know, because I was thinking of Alabama players. And for whatever reason, I just thought of Damian Pierce. And then I was like, oh, I got to wait. This isn't right. But yeah, I meant to talk about Brian Robinson because they were, you know, one after another getting drafted. And it was just like, man, you know, like it's just because they're Alabama players, you know, like Damian Harris got drafted in the first round because he was an Alabama player, not necessarily because of his talent or anything like that. Brian Robinson got drafted where he did because he was an Alabama player. Like neither one of them have been very good in the NFL. And so, you know, I think that's just a perfect example of it, but that's also just you know, yes, you can get drafted, but you know, if you're, like I said, if you're truly looking to see who's the next big player, the next best player is, you have to pay attention to some of these important metrics though, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that back, yeah, definitely is interesting when you put everything into context of like, okay, well, he actually is 6'4", 215, and like you said, he's, what, in his fourth year versus Stetson had, you know, more than that, let's say. It seemed like he had forever. But interesting stuff. How about, you know, away from the quarterbacks? It's a lot of quarterback talk, huh? How about the Jonathan Brooks hate dealt there these days?
I love it. Yeah.
I don't love it.
But I don't love the hate, either. But I love you bringing it up. That's what I meant.
Yeah. I don't like this, man. And I just, you know, I hate to keep plugging the article, right? But he is another one who comes to mind. And maybe that's, you know, this topic this week is partly relevant or partly in my mind too, because of the stuff that article contains and just some of the thoughts going into it is like, you know, what could we have been, you know, more reactive to or done better. And in some of these players that we've just talked about so far, there seems to be a wide range of opinions out there. Some of them, it's like, wow, why are you so low on this player? And I think Jonathan Brooks is one of those guys where I'm very surprised at how low he still is in a lot of ranks.
Yeah, I've literally heard pods today talking about Jonathan Brooks is not a you know, high-end NFL talent. He's not going to be athletic enough. He's not going to be this, you know, whatever. Honestly, the only argument I can really see by looking at his profile, and it's not even a great one, especially if you consider how the NFL has looked at some of these backs in the previous years, is the fact that he's, 6 foot 204. Like that's really, I mean, I don't know if you have a different height weight, but, you know, that's what I have here. That's fine. Like it's not ideal. It's not perfect. It's fine. But, you know, when we go and we look at the BMI, it's 28, you know, it's not, once again, it's not great. It's not perfect, but you know, it's perfectly fine. But, you know, when we think about, Devon Achane is, you know, is considered one of the top, what, a top five running back in Dynasty right now. Jahmyr Gibbs is considered a top three running back in Dynasty right now. Keaton Mitchell is the big waiver pickup this week. Like, these are all like sub 200 pound running backs, and we're going to complain about a 205 pound running back that'll probably be bigger than that. Like, he probably has the frame to even be bigger than that, like once he gets into an NFL weight room and all that kind of stuff. But even if he doesn't, it's perfectly fine. Like, I have no issues with it. But I mean, look at what he's actually doing. Like, I'm not comparing the players whatsoever, but it's kind of hard not to at the same time. Like, Bijan Robinson at the same exact school had way more carries, and that's why his numbers are not going to look the same. But Jonathan Brooks is actually putting up better numbers, metrics wise, this season than Bijan Robinson did last season. Now, once again, I'm not comparing him to Bijan Robinson, but Bijan had an 8% big time run rate. Okay, Jonathan Brooks has a 10% big time run rate. It just means he's breaking more big plays per rush attempt. Now, once again, doesn't mean he's better than Bijan just because of one metric, but I mean, he's standing out there. He's catching the ball. He's getting at least two per game. He's hitting the minimum thresholds there. He's not some amazing receiver, and I would say that Bijan's a much better receiver than Jonathan Brooks is. But when you get into like the PPR points per touch, 1.7 PPR points per touch is unreal. Like, just unreal. You don't see that from an unathletic plotter, like that kind of thing. I don't understand where those arguments are being made. So I feel like either A, I'm going to be completely wrong. B, he's going to come out and light up the combine, and people are going to be like, maybe he was more athletic than we thought. You know, just kind of like Bijan. I mean, wasn't the argument about Bijan that he wasn't athletic, that he wasn't as athletic as people were trying to make him out to be? He was going to run a 4.55 or a 4.6 or something like that. And then he goes and he runs a 4.44, whatever the hell he ran, something plenty fast enough for a guy his size. And then everyone's like, oh, I don't know why we thought that, you know? So I kind of feel like it's going to be the exact same thing. And so it's like, history's repeating itself all over again, which it tends to do. And yet, you know, people are like, oh, Jonathan Brooks, not a top running back in the class. I'm like, he might be the top running back in the class.
And I think people are slow to react to these types of things. And that's sometimes understandable. I mean, I think that, you know, along the way, we've been higher on some guys. Like, I'll give you a shout out. You know, I personally have always been the Jonathan Brooks guy, been drafting him for a few years. You've been the Audric Estime guy, been drafting him for a while now. And it like takes so long for consensus to catch up to that, right? And
it's still, we could make the same exact vent and rant about Audric Estime. Like, there's still people out there saying, no, he's not an NFL running back and blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely. So, and I don't necessarily need to rehash all the stuff that you said with Jonathan Brooks, but I mean, it was funny because he was such a great recruit coming out, or at least like he was such a prolific high school player. Jonathan Brooks was amazing in the state of Texas. He was just a little small coming out, but we should know that backs can put on a good amount of weight. In fact, Jonathan Brooks right now on the Texas and ESPN's Texas team page, the University of Texas Athletics roster page, they have Brooks at 207 weight-wise, and ESPN has him at 207, which is very nice. Now, don't get me wrong, he could be 200 pounds. Like, I truthfully don't know. Sometimes I take those with a grain of salt, but as a general range, like even if he's 7 pounds less, which is a lot, than the team site and all that, still he's in a good spot. And I've always went with the Aaron Jones comp, honestly, for Jonathan Brooks. And I still don't mind that. Even if he gets better draft capital than Aaron Jones did, just a functional running back who's maybe not this huge guy who's going to get a 90% workload in the NFL. Like, who gets that nowadays anyways? Like, you don't need that. You just need to be bursty enough, skilled enough to get some touches. So anyways, and I think Aaron, that Brooks is a good
Aaron player. Jones was a small school player, right?
Yes, right. So not necessarily.
So, I mean, if we comp them, I mean, we know that Aaron Jones is good. Like, that's definitively good. So if we just take away the small school part of it, now we have Aaron Jones with better draft capital.
I like it. And then people were questioning Jonathan Brooks' receiving ability, and now he's actually showing up. And like you said, he's not a prolific guy. He's not an Austin Eckler. He's not a Bijan, but he doesn't need to be a solid NFL running back. So yes.
No, yeah, I believe that Bijan is a much better receiver, but that doesn't mean that Jonathan Brooks is a bad receiver. You know, like Bijan was considered a once in a, you know, 5-year guy or whatever. You know, some people even make an argument for more. And, you know, I think that we can say that Jonathan Brooks isn't that, but he's still really good.
Absolutely. Another player take that it wouldn't be the Devy devotional if we didn't bring up our guy, Luther Burden. I think this isn't even necessarily directed towards anybody. This is directed towards both sides of the argument, I guess, the extreme nature that was out there this offseason too, because there were people saying like he was maybe going to be the wide receiver one after, you know, the guys leave. Yeah, at some point in the future, that could definitely be possible. I was not there. You were definitely not there. But then there was the opposite side, too, of that and saying Luther Burden is really bad. Luther Burden is really raw, and he's not going to come through for you this year. And to be honest, you know, he has done really quite well this season. We're not going to say like he's an elite prospect at this point, but at the same time, he's been good. So just the amount of extreme on both sides this offseason and even early into the season. Well, I just found it to be very interesting, but I'm glad that things have kind of been somewhere in the middle. And oftentimes the truth is somewhere kind of in the middle.
And that's very true. And, you know, I said he was terrible, and I've already apologized for that. He's obviously not terrible. That doesn't mean that I think he's the wide receiver one or anything like that. He's clearly not terrible. That's 100% true. But I think the one thing that doesn't truly get talked about a lot with Burden and like the giant step that he's taken is Brady Cook's ascension. And you know, like Brady Cook has taken a massive step too. And obviously that's going to work hand in hand. You know, if your receiver gets better, you're going to get better. But it hasn't all been Luther Burden. We saw Theo Weiss be the wide receiver one this past week. And, you know, Burden got like, what, half the yardage and receptions that Theo Weiss did. And I don't think they were that far off from each other the previous week either. So it's not just Burden. And Brady Cook has really taken a step forward. And so when you combine all of that kind of stuff, you know, it makes it more difficult to be like, oh, it's just one person. Like, it's almost like the entire offense has just gotten better, you know? And so it's good for everyone. But then, you know, I still look at like the low ADOT and all that kind of stuff for Burden. And I still wonder if he's more of a LaVisca Chenault or something like that. And I know you hate that comp. And I'm not truly trying to comp him to it, but it just does make a lot of sense because it's this guy that hasn't really had to do much, hasn't truly played a lot of like studly defenses or anything like that. If anything, he's played some really shitty ones. And you know, is he going to be able to replicate what he's doing right now in the NFL? And I'm not saying that he can't. Obviously not comping the sizes at all, but it also kind of reminds me of like a Rondale Moore. You know, and just like, can you replicate that once you get to the NFL? Now, he's obviously bigger, probably faster and all that kind of stuff than Rondale. So it's probably not a great comp, but I'm just trying to think of like how he was used in college and then how, you know, he'll be used in the NFL, like that kind of thing. The good news is we have a whole other year to talk about Luther Burden and figure out who he truly is. And I think, you know, hopefully we'll get some better matchups and stuff like that. And then we can say like, yeah, he's actually made the progression. He is a quality NFL wide receiver or not, like that kind of thing.
That's a great point. Okay. Yeah. No, honestly, I mean, that's well said that he still has a ways to go and hopefully these players continue to get better. Right. I mean, sophomores typically do, but things don't always work out. So to be determined how Luther Burden develops his game, if he can truly reach that ceiling of being a guy who can win at all levels of the field. It is promising now, though, that he's winning deep. That is the one area that has changed because, like you said, the ADOT remains pretty low besides some of the deep shots. And he's connected on some of them. Obviously, he almost has 1,000 yards receiving. The next closest guy is 530 on the team for receiving. So, I mean, he is their kind of big play threat type this season, in addition to being used, you know, close to the line of scrimmage in some similar ways to as last year. So should be interesting. But do you have any other, you know, player specific takes for us here, John?
Man, I feel like I've been so focused on the quarterbacks lately that, like, that's the only thing that I'm really, like, picking up on. I kind of had a Nicholas Singleton take, but I don't know. I mean, like, I like Singleton. So, like, this isn't, like, me hating on him whatsoever. But I do feel like the whole – there's still people out there saying that Nicholas Singleton is just uber athletic and that's all that matters. Like, he's my RB1 because he's so athletic. No. He should not be your RB1 because he's so athletic. He should be your RB1 because he's athletic and he's good. Like, he needs to have the and part, and he really doesn't have the and part. And once again, that's not to say that I hate Nicholas Singleton or that I think he's bad or anything like that. But I mean, he's never been my RB1 in the 2025 class. He wasn't last year. And then Quinshon Judkins, who was my RB1 from last year, has dropped off a little bit. Not too much, but a little bit. And so he's no longer my RB1. But now there's a different RB1. So it's just like Singleton has to do something. He has to stand out. He has to actually show that he can be that quality RB. And he's not just a combine warrior or whatever for me to say, yes, he's going to be. Because, yeah, we've seen these Devon Achans and Jahmyr Gibbs and all those, but like those guys were prolific running backs in the NFL. They weren't just 4.39 running backs. That's not all they had in their game plan, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And there are many examples, some of which are actually slipping my mind now, but even like Kalen Ballage, who everybody was so in love with some of the tools and athletic ability, and, you know, he was ripped, right? He had a great build to him, whatever. I mean, the guy wasn't good at football. He was just not a good running back. No. And maybe we're seeing a little bit of that with Donovan Edwards. We'll see. I still think that there's an injury at play, which is widely not reported by, you know, the fact that he's out there playing the games makes you think, okay, well, he probably isn't hurt, but that doesn't mean that it didn't zap some of his abilities this season. Is he healthy enough to play? Yes. Is he at his peak athleticism, at his peak health? I would speculate no, but at the same time, maybe it's part of it, or I think at least part of it is likely that he's not the most nuanced and advanced runner. And I think we're seeing a bit of that with Nick Singleton too, because you compare even like a Catron Allen and Catron Allen, I mean, he's still struggling like to some degree, 4.8 yards per carry. And like just the Penn State offense is just not, you know, quite as amazing as some people maybe anticipated them being this season. But yes, you have to be worried with Nicholas Singleton's production thus far, his efficiency metrics, a guy who has thrived off of big plays, not breaking big plays this season. It doesn't make any sense. And I've heard some folks who probably have honed in a little bit more on the film evaluation thus far this season saying he is hesitant out there. He's not running. He's not playing to his strengths, which is basically run really fast in a straight line or run around everybody and break off 80 yard touchdowns like that. That is kind of his bread and butter and what he did in high school, not being the most advanced rusher coming out of a system that didn't really ask him to do much other than just sweeps and tosses and reverses all the time. So anyways, I think he needs to develop some, and I'm moving him down. I'm going to be reactive to what's going on here, because we talked earlier in the podcast about how underreacting to Jonathan Brooks, to Audric Estime, usually it's not to your advantage to be too slow on these things reacting wise. I think that reacting to Nick Singleton's struggles also should be something that we do. So not saying to like drop him down to RB 40 in Devy, but I mean, is he the RB one anymore? No, I do not think he deserves that.
I obviously agree. And I mean, honestly, a player that people hated and probably still hate, Jaden Ott, I have almost tied with Nicholas Singleton. I mean, that's probably blasphemy to a lot of people, but I feel like, you know, like you said, that they're kind of late coming around on this one. And I'm not saying that Ott's a better running back. I actually have him, you know, a little bit behind Singleton, but I mean, it's so close that I wouldn't like truly argue with you if you were like, no, Ott's a better running back. But okay, I get it, you know. But, you know, I think of like with Singleton, I think of Trevion Henderson. And obviously, like, Henderson's probably a better receiver and all that because Singleton's not a very good one, although he doesn't really get too many opportunities to showcase it. So maybe he is. Who knows? I'm not trying to like talk bad once again about Singleton. But like, look at what Trevion Henderson is doing on a bad, or not maybe not bad, but a not prolific offense in Ohio State, coming off of injury, just goes out and dominates, basically like wins the game for Ohio State the last 2 weeks. Like, they put the game on his shoulder, and he did it, you know. So I look at that kind of player and I go, that's a stud. That's who I want on my team. That's who I want to draft. I see what Singleton's doing and I go, you know?
Yeah, no, that's fair. And there are so many layers to evaluating guys that, I mean, that's why Singleton shows up even better in the model, even though the efficiency, the production is not nearly there. And, you know, the size and the competition levels and, you know, the recruiting pedigree, you know, 5-star versus lower 4-star, you know, all those things. Yeah, they make a difference. But at the end of the day, we were talking earlier, don't just trust like a team or a system, but also look at what the player is doing. And right now what the player is doing in Nick Singleton's case is kind of worrisome for sure.
Oh, I got another one.
Okay.
Can we please, for the love of God, stop comping Braylon Allen to AJ Dillon? Please. People,
I love the one that I had just seen. It was like, well, I don't know. I don't think that we should be comping him to AJ Dillon. AJ Dillon was so athletic, and I'm like, dude, no. I mean, like, he was ripped. He was definitely ripped, and he showed well, I guess, in some athletic measures. Yes, but like, come on, no. AJ Dillon is not like this prolific athlete. He's not tearing it up at the NFL level. Come on.
No, and I mean, it was more, it's all size adjusted stuff, you know, like, oh, he was such a stud because he weighed 248 pounds, 250, whatever he was. I think he was 250, you know, and Braylon Allen isn't quite that, but I honestly think that Braylon Allen is a better athlete, you know, like I would hope, I assume, I just don't understand it. Like, AJ Dillon was like almost the definition of a compiler in college. And Braylon Allen really isn't that. And, you know, like you see the big time run rate. It's not up there with the Trevion. Trevion's at 10%. Braylon's at 8%, you know, but that's still well over the threshold that we're looking for. Now we're starting to see receptions from Braylon. It's not just the running. We're actually seeing some, you know, receiving yardage and receptions and all that kind of stuff. The PPR points per touch are great. If you want to talk about Braylon Allen, has 591 rushing attempts. Now, obviously, we know that Wisconsin runs and all that kind of stuff. So, like, it's not like some big surprise. The closest person to Braylon Allen in the top of my, actually, Devin Neal has quite a few. Blake Corum obviously has quite a few because he's a senior. But like, Trevion Henderson has 400 rushing attempts. Now, that's not that surprising because he's been hurt. And so, I mean, that's not like a huge shock or anything. Audric Estime has 344. Jonathan Brooks has 220. Like, you want to talk about who's actually proven? It's Braylon Allen, you know, but it's not just this compiler, because if we go through, and I did, somebody posted something about AJ Dillon. It was a month ago, a couple weeks ago, whatever it was. And I wish I could probably find it if you give me a second, but somebody posted, like, basically Braylon Allen is following AJ Dillon's college career. And like, that was the comp. And then I went on to show like the actual predictive metrics that I look at for running backs and said, they are not close at all. Please stop saying that Braylon Allen is AJ Dillon, because they're not. Like, I listed three important metrics. I want to say it was big time run rate, PPR points per touch. And I don't know what the other one would have been. Maybe, oh, it was scrimmage yards per game. Okay. And so I showed those three metrics, which are pretty important. They're in all of my running back models. They're not close. They're just not close. And I'll give you a second to talk, and I'm going to try and find it, because I was just like, man, I don't understand how you can. And that's the problem that I have with a lot. We can vent about all these charts and graphs and things that people post on Twitter that they have no idea what it is, but it makes their guy look good. And I'm like, this is what makes metrics and analytics and all that kind of stuff look bad, because people post this shit and it doesn't mean anything. Like these are not predictive metrics. These are descriptive metrics, and it just shows what have they done. It doesn't show who are they going to be. And the metrics that I'm looking at have proven to be just predictive and show who they will be and who they will become, not just who they've been.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a lot of metrics that you're going to see out there are just so stylistic in nature and not necessarily, like you said, predictive or that useful for telling us, is the guy going to be good? Now, it might tell you some individual things about the game, you know, fun things like, you know, how many tackles are they breaking, you know, before the line of scrimmage and, you know, this and that. And it is of interest, right? But yeah, at the end of the day, to prove that somebody is good with some of the metrics you see out there, it's kind of laughable.
It literally took me 2 seconds to find it. Okay. And it was not AJ Dillon. It was Tank Bigsby, which is hilarious. Ooh. Because you know how much we love Tank Bigsby on this program. So that's what actually, like, that's what pissed me off. And I was like, do not ever compare Braylon Allen to Tank Bigsby. Tank is not a good running back, and Braylon is. But, you know, I literally just, I showed the scrimmage yards, 109.3 scrimmage yards per game, Tank 95.4. Okay. That's already a decent amount of difference right there. 1.1 PPR points per touch for Braylon, 0.91 PPR points per touch for Tank. 0.2 PPR points per touch doesn't sound like a huge difference. It's a ginormous difference. Like, just think about that. Every time you touch the ball, you're getting 0.2 points less than the other player. That adds up. 9.07 big time run rate for Braylon this season, 6.7% for Tank in his best season. And then 6'2", 238 pounds for Braylon, 6', 208 pounds for Tank. Like, tell me that those are the same profile. Get the hell out of here.
Yes, the comparison body size wise, it's funny. It is. One thing I wanted to rant about, not necessarily about any analyst, media, anything like that at all, actually. It's just like, can the Oregon State Beavers, can they just give Damian Martinez some goal line work, like, ever? Just please. The guy is easily the most capable, efficient, explosive, powerful back you have, and he's just being treated like he's some sort of plotter that just occasionally will get some touches. Like, and I get he's leading the team by a wide margin with rushing attempts, but not the important ones, not the goal line ones. It's just so I don't know. It's kind of incompetent, honestly, the usage that's going on there. And it's not like he's being featured much in the passing game. He should definitely be featured more there too. So anyways, just kind of a rant. And I think there's going to be a lot of fantasy managers who feel the same way and are frustrated by the usage out there. So we got to hope that coaches start utilizing their best players, their clearly most efficient players, more optimally.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's fantasy wanting, and that doesn't usually work out too well. Just, you know, you get lucky or you don't. It's basically what it boils down to. And that's why you have to draft, you know, multiple players at each position so that, you know, exactly, this year it's working out for this player and not so much for this one, yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
Now,
you're going to run into your Arthur Smiths of the college world too, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like DJ Moore, quite literally a top 10 dynasty wide receiver. And yet he can't truly, he has Tyson Bagent throwing it to him. You know, like, it's just, it blows your mind how bad of luck one player can, you know, can have. And unfortunately, it happens every year. Garrett Wilson, you know, he was supposed to have Aaron Rodgers. He has Zach Wilson. We can go on and on and on. Drake London with Desmond Ridder and so on and so forth. Like, it just unfortunately happens. That's what I said. I mean, you can't just truly rely on one player, you know, two players or whatever. You have to have multiples, and you have to be willing to move on. You know, just like we were talking about with your Devy ideas of players. You have to be able to quickly change your, you know, your perspective and all that kind of stuff. You have to be able to do that in Dynasty and everything as well. But this isn't necessarily a vent per se, but I was thinking about this at work today. The last 2 years, I've been pretty hardcore against a player that everyone loved. 2 years ago, it was Isaiah Spiller. Everyone loved Isaiah Spiller, and I was like, I don't want anything to do with him. He's garbage. He was literally considered, before the combine, before the draft, he was considered the RB1 in Devy, you know, or at least in that class. And I wanted nothing to do with him. This past year, it was Tank Bigsby. Like, everyone loved Tank Bigsby. There were some people calling for him to be the RB1 in the class, or not, maybe not the RB1, but the RB2 in the class, and so on and so forth. I obviously wanted nothing. He's a garbage player. I was trying to figure out who is that in this class, and I've been really struggling with it, but I think I might have just figured out who it was. And it's not somebody that, like, people are truly pushing up, but I feel like it works because it's just a name that people have been talking about for at least the past year, if not longer, and he never has done anything. And it's Jace McClellan from Alabama. I just don't think he's done enough, and yet people are still pimping him up because he's an Alabama running back, because, you know, this and that. He didn't get his shot before, and it's like, no, he's not good. It's kind of the what was the Georgia running back that you said before? I can't think of his name right now.
You say Kendall Milton?
Kendall Milton, yeah, thank you. It's kind of like him. You know, it's just like he doesn't ever produce. And so at some point you have to go, he's not going to produce, you know, and that's how I feel about Jace McClellan. You know, 6% big time run rate, 0.9 PPR points per touch, you know, 68 scrim yards per game. Like, it's just nothing stands out as this, like, amazing player or anything like that. It doesn't seem like he's uber athletic or whatever. I get that Alabama's offense hasn't been amazing this year, but I just feel like that's the player that people are going to be higher on than I am when it's all said and done, and I'm just going to be pretty much out on him because there's at least 10 other guys that I would rather have right now than Jace McClellan.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. I tend to agree that he's going to be, I don't know. I mean, he was more hyped going into this offseason and this season. But at this point, Jace McClellan, I mean, he's not being talked about, at least in that top tier of guys. So at this point, I haven't even seen that much hype or anything for him being day two. Like, I mean, not saying that he won't get the day two hype. Let's say he finishes the season kind of in a solid enough nature and Alabama, you know, gets into some big games here and they get more national attention. I could see more and more people saying, oh yeah, Jace McClellan, don't forget about him as like a top five back in the class, but he's not going to be talked about in the same way that Spiller was, like RB1 or RB2, and Tank Bigsby was, like, as a top three and like a pretty,
yeah,
you know, top end guy. So, you know, the extreme takes, I think, are a little bit more in check now with McClellan. People are kind of realizing, hopefully, that he's maybe not the same guy he was as a freshman. Like, unfortunately, the guy tore his ACL and he hasn't been quite as elite as or top end as an athlete since. So yes, I do think that that's a fair shout out in that way, but he won't get as hype in my opinion.
Yeah. I don't think, I mean, maybe once we get closer to draft time, but like we were hating on Tank all of last year because people were so hyped on him. We were hating. I didn't even get to the point of like really looking at prospects and all that kind of stuff until around the draft time for the Isaiah Spiller. So I didn't get a chance to hate on him too much in that season before that. So unfortunately I didn't get to do that, but I mean, we literally hated on Tank all of last year because people were saying, oh, he's back after that. Mercer, right? They played Mercer and people were like, oh my God, Tank's back. Like, he's back. And then of course he wasn't back. And then he got, you know, uber hyped again and, you know, the Senior Bowl and whatever, like whatever he did, the combine, everything. He got drafted, always going to take Travis Etienne's job. You know, it's just but so Jace McClellan is not getting that kind of hype, at least as of right now. But I don't know that anyone is. I mean, you know, even people are against Trevion Henderson because he's injury prone. They hate Audric Estime because he's not athletic. I'm doing air quotes, even though he's proven that he's athletic. Like, what do you want, guys? I don't know. He's just a stud. Braylon Allen's not athletic. He's just AJ Dillon. So it seems like everyone hates every running back. So in essence, that could mean that Jace McClellan is that overhyped guy when it's all said and done. Cause if everyone hates every running back, they'll be like, oh, well, yeah, just get the Alabama guy.
Yeah. All very fair there, John. That's for sure.
All right. So I think I'm all vented out. You got anything else?
Hey man, I'm feeling good. Yeah, no, I think that was nice to just kind of say what's on our minds, some of the things we've really been feeling here. And I will go back to that point, or at least the example of like this year, we really haven't had a guy that we're just strongly against, that we're just pounding the table for not drafting, like Tank Bigsby or Isaiah Spiller or guys like that in the past, which I think is kind of cool. You know, it's refreshing not to necessarily have, you know, trying to fight everybody on, you know, trying to bring back down to reality, I guess, about a player. So that is neat.
Not for the running backs, but for the quarterbacks, 100%. Like
that's a battle. That's a battle, right?
Bo Nix, get the hell out of here. Like, I don't know how you could ever look at Bo Nix and say he's an NFL quarterback. He's not. Michael Penix Jr., I can see more arguments for him. I still don't. I just don't agree. You know, I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. Obviously, he has the injury history. He's a six-year player. Like, I want nothing to do with him. Like, he he's looking good in the Pac-12. I don't want you to look good in the Pac-12. I want you to look amazing in the Pac-12. And I don't really think he's doing that. He's looking fine. You know, like, he's putting up good numbers in the Pac-12. And when it's all said and done, yeah, like I said, that's not really what I want to see.
Damn it, John. You're being logical. You're being grounded here. Objective. Come on. The hype, right? He's taking this Washington team. He's breaking all these records. He's throwing for this many yards. He's got to be elite, right? No, I like the groundedness that your approach takes with that, because you're right that people get super hyped when they see these big games out of a guy like Penix, or what they saw last year out of Nix. And the pure fantasy points were great because he was rushing and having some kind of unsustainable success on the ground, for example, along with a lot of success as a passer without necessarily doing, you know, the big time NFL throwing and demonstrating the arm talent he's going to need if he wants to excel at the NFL level.
Oh, I had another one. I had one more that I actually thought of while I was working earlier, and I was trying to think of, you know, like, what can I vent about? Can we stop with Michael Pratt? Like, he's not an NFL quarterback either. Like, I don't understand why Michael Pratt is being considered like the QB3 in the class by some people. We just got to stop this. Like, G5, obviously. Like, I know Tulane is getting some hype. People love them some Tyjae Spears. You know, like, but Michael Pratt is not an NFL quarterback. Like, it's just, I'm trying to find him. So in G5, Michael Pratt has a 5.3 big time throw rate, 5.3% big time throw rate. He has a 9.95 intended air yards in the G5. Okay. JJ McCarthy has a 7.3% big time throw rate and a 10.65 intended air yards per play in the Big Ten. Why are we talking about Michael Pratt? I don't understand. 1.05 PPR points per touch for JJ McCarthy in the Big Ten. 0.88 PPR points per touch from Michael Pratt in at Tulane. Come on, guys.
Got to insert the "Is this your king?" meme into there. This is your king.
That's but, it, man.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't necessarily see it either, but.
I have Michael Pratt ranked one spot behind Michael Penix Jr. in my ranks, and I do not have Michael Penix Jr. as a top five quarterback in this class. So that should show you and tell you everything about at least how I feel about Michael Pratt.
Well, I'm surprised they're that close, actually.
Yeah, I mean, they are close. Don't really know why. It's well, actually, I do know why. It's because Michael Pratt's a six-year player. That's why.
Yeah. Yep. The 6 year is not great.
Oh, you know who I have directly behind that? Michael Pratt, Graham Mertz. So ooh, that shows you how I feel about those three players.
Yeah, but that's a Florida bias talking, you know. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, just kidding. I love him so much.
He's so great. For Eugene Wilson, maybe. No.
Absolutely. Right.
Well, that was fun.
No, it was. I'm like you said, I feel a lot more calm, a lot more collected. Obviously, like I don't really have to get this off my chest because I've said it a million times, but you, just because you are now officially a C2C boy, are going to be caught up in this, but you know, I want you to know, I still love you, but C2C boys, Bucky Irving is an actual NFL running back. And you need to understand that that is the case. That's probably going to be my last vent. I feel better, feel good. Yeah. I'm sorry that he's smaller than you guys want him to be, but look at what the NFL is doing right now. He is a stud.
This is going to have to be a debate at another for another time. I love it.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm always in the middle, but I finally traded away my Bucky Irving share. You saw what trade I did. I got Kyler Murray in a deal. Can't say no to Kyler, right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that made sense.
Deal. So especially because you're going for a playoff win or something. So, I mean, yeah, I loved that deal. I hate getting rid of Bucky, but, you know, sometimes you got to get rid of these college players that haven't truly proven it, even if you do love them, for a guy that has been a top five QB every time he's touched the ball.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe we'll chat some more about Bucky Irving. We'll have to chat about all the prospects here as we're getting, you know, towards the end of the season. Look ahead to the Devy C2C guys, incoming freshmen, and then the rookie talk too. We love to do it all here. So there is going to be a lot in the coming months to talk about.
Absolutely. And that's why we kind of wanted to do this one, just more of a fun, you know, rant vent kind of deal. And then, you know, we're going to get into all of this as far as the prospects, obviously, for the next few months and more. We're going to be talking about all these guys and, you know, leading up to the combine and everything. We're going to solidify our ranks and how we feel about them and all that kind of stuff. But this is going to be a lot of fun. This is the first year that I implemented big time throw rate intended air yards into the college model. And I just love the way that everything's worked out, because in the past I'm picking up guys like, now I can't think of his damn name. The guy from Mississippi State,
Will Rogers, or are you saying, or
not Will Rogers.
What is the question?
The quarterback from Mississippi State that I was high on at one point, and I can't think of his damn name now. But it's not important. But the point is, I'm picking up. In the past, I was picking up on certain players that weren't really like they were good college quarterbacks, but they weren't good NFL quarterbacks, and it's because, you know, you're not looking at the big time throw rate. You're not looking at the intended air yards. You might find a guy it's Will Rogers. You're right. I'm sorry. It was Will Rogers. Yeah. It didn't sound right at first. I was thinking of Will Howard. Obviously, it was not Will Howard. It was Will Rogers. Okay. So, yeah, it was Will Rogers. You know, like he has, let's see here if I can find him. I'm going to look him up real quick because I want to see what his big time throw rate. His big time throw rate is 3.7%. Not good. His intended air yards, 6.95 intended air yards per play. He's not pushing the ball down the field. So like, but he broke records at Mississippi State. You know, like he had a shit ton of yardage. He had touchdowns. He had all that kind of stuff, but he's not an NFL quarterback. And like, so I was picking up on certain players like that in the past. I've gotten rid of all of those players now, and it's amazing. I absolutely loved it. And that's why I wrote the article about the big time throw rate and the intended air yards. It's like, you can just throw away. There's hundreds and hundreds of college quarterbacks every year, and you can throw away almost 100 of them just by looking at big time throw rate and intended air yards. And then from there, you might have 10 to 15 guys. And then you go, okay, well, what sets this guy apart from this guy? Like, you can actually, like, but you've already narrowed it down to like 10 to 15 guys out of 100. You know, you've gotten rid of the Will Rogers and like that kind of stuff. So I'm very excited about where the model is right now. And I'm obviously picking up on a lot of good players, and I'm not picking up on all the BS anymore. So I love it.
Yes. Yes. It's always, well, such a rewarding thing to fine tune the process and get, you know, get more and more hits. And yeah, this is a good opportunity for us to reflect, you know, in this podcast, and always it's good to take a look back and then also look ahead to see what we can improve on too. So I like that.
Absolutely. Go get Connor Wegman. That's how we're going to reflect, and we're going to look forward as well. I think he is probably the easiest buy that you can get right now. He's hurt. He's not playing, like, you know, like, he's out of sight, out of mind. Get him thrown into a deal or whatever. But enough about that. It's been a lot of fun venting, feeling better, all that kind of stuff. Like I said, we will be back in 2 weeks to discuss more of what's going on. Hopefully Caleb Williams will have figured things out at that point, because it has not been looking good recently. Hopefully JJ McCarthy will have dominated Penn State, and then we'll say, hey, this guy is literally the QB1, QB2, QB3 in this class, whatever, at least a top three guy in this class. And, you know, and then we'll maybe like start solidifying some of these ranks, that kind of stuff.
Love it.
Any words of wisdom before we get out of here? Where can they find your newest only article?
Yeah. I actually have a couple up on Campus to Canton, but the only recent one just got released here this week. And so that's going to be at campusdecanton.com. Go check out all their work, check out the article. And yeah, those are the big things going on. So those are the words of wisdom from my end.
Oh, and I did want to say, like, I always talk about how I listen to a lot of podcasts and everything. The Devi Marketplace is shutting down, unfortunately. And, you know, I love Shane. I love Nelly. You know, I haven't really truly talked to Kane too much, but, you know, I even love Kane. I've appreciated their podcast over the past couple of years and everything. So I'm sad to see those guys go. Luckily, I'm in a league with Shane and Nelly, not with Kane. But, you know, it's always sad when it's like a podcast that you have listened to for a while, you know, goes away. So I want to say that I do appreciate them and their time and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sad to see them go.
Yeah, good point. And I'm glad you included that, because a lot of fun listening to them. And, you know, it's always too bad to lose more folks in the Devi space. And I know they're still going to be in the space, so that's great, but not necessarily doing the podcast. So, yeah, appreciate their work. And I can totally relate to how it is time consuming, but you and I really enjoy putting out the pod. So we're liking what we're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, it is tough sometimes. You know, you get home from work late and you're like, oh man, I don't want to do this. But then, you know, like halfway through, it's like, man, this is fun. You know, like I this is why I do it. Like, it's just fun. I enjoy talking football. I enjoy talking players, especially. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. But we appreciate you guys listening. Hopefully you guys had fun as well. We will be back as soon as possible. But until then, we are cashing out. See you.